So my name is Nick Beesborg, and I'm the lead minister for the New Braunfels Church of Christ. And New Braunfels is in a town between San Antonio and Austin, Texas. And so that's me. I'm married, two kids.
Yeah, Eric Gentry. I'm in Memphis, Tennessee at the Highland Church of Christ. I'm one of the preaching ministers there and been there 7 years. That's it.
I'm Ben Fike, as of 6 months ago in Durham, North Carolina at the Colmill Road Church of Christ. It was in Jackson, Mississippi before then, and I'm really glad you all are here. Thanks for coming to share this time here.
You're welcome. So, many of you, this is your first time at Pepperdine. Most of you have been here before, I'm assuming. So you know Pepperdine is a safe space where you can come and reunite with friends, family, loved ones, maybe co-preachers, co-ministers, listen to some good speakers, enjoy the scenery, the beauty of Malibu. The weather's great. I know for me and my ministry, this is just a great place for me to just to find some new energy, to get restored, uplifted, be encouraged, hang out with buds and friends and people throughout the week and listen to good preaching like I heard a little bit ago. And I'm privileged just because I'm networked within the Church of Christ. You know, I went to a Church of Christ school, eventually Cascade and Portland, Oregon, eventually made my way to AC, that I have the opportunity and the ability to continue with some networking and some connections and some communities. And so I'm familiar with networking in groups like ElderLink, or we talked briefly about CMI, the Contemplative Ministers Initiative. And so I'm privileged to periodically in my ministry, even at a young age, to be asked, to be involved, to be invited to these like cohort groups where ministers can come together and share life together. I'll be honest with you, though, most of those are often short-lived. The longest one was CMI, and it was 2 years. And oftentimes, at the end of the road of these times that I get to spend in renewal, the question I keep wrestling with is, what now? Do I just need to go find another one? Most of the time I'm inviting myself. And so for us, we decided to take this journey to say, hey, let's just create this constant community together, just the three of us. And Ben's the one that initiated it. We were in this cohort together called Contemplative Ministers Initiative. He asked us, hey, would you be interested? That's all I said. Would you be interested in meeting with me weekly and maybe just keeping each other accountable and praying together? And essentially what he was saying was, hey, we're friends. We see each other at places like Pepperdine. You know, we go out once in a while and hang out. But would you be willing and consider taking our relationship to the next step? Right? And there's some vulnerability in that, right? To create that environment. And so we agreed to it. And so we decided to create this covenant and this community together. Now, that doesn't mean there's not other communities. There are overlapping communities. And I still have my friends, and I still am part of ministerial alliances, and I'm still going to Pepperdine University. But even in the midst of that, I still have just these two guys that I meet weekly with. And a couple things I want to say to that, because what we're going to try to encourage you to do is consider, you know, finding those spiritual friendships with you. Is a couple things that I first want to introduce to you is this group, it sounds bad, but it's not competitive, but it's exclusive. Mm-hmm. Intentionally exclusive. And those types of friendships have to be exclusive. Because it has taken us 3 years, and we're still working on it, to create the type of trust and the type of vulnerability and transparency that's necessary for us to be where we need to be spiritually. And so as we dive deeper into what we're doing, we don't really have an open door policy. We're not inviting others in. It's not like we're creating this group because then eventually we're going to break off and create new groups. It's not that type of discipleship program. It's simply just three guys just getting together. And I think that's important. And so the question you might be asking yourself that we are still wrestling with is, how do you create this community? For us, maybe it was circumstantial. For us, it was one person asking us. For us, we just happened to be at a place and time in our lives where we were vulnerable and in some ways equally hurting, lonely, struggling in ministry. And so there's a lot of ways and reasons to why we created this community. But one of the questions that we've been asked is, how did you guys pick each other? Like, what is it about the three of you that have stayed together for 3 years and have not given up? I don't know the answer to that, because we like each other, but like, we don't go to ball games together. I don't even know if Ben likes sports.
Not really.
We don't. We share life together. And so for us, when we were trying to identify partners, or when you think about partners and creating a group like this, obviously you want to think about people outside of your own context. That's important for us. So when we were thinking about creating this group, we knew that we had to find people outside our own context. And then we also knew that because of our relationship through conferences and stuff like that, that it would be important for us to have a relationship, but to be connected, to know the same language and the same experiences, but also have enough space between us. Like, we have a healthy long-distance relationship, and I think that's important as well. And so when you think about a group, a covenant group like we have, I would recommend that you don't see that person every day, personally. So obviously your spouse might not be that spiritual friendship that we're talking about. Not that they're not your friend, but consider that as well. So as we lean into, and I'm about to step back, is consider a group that you want to form, who will be in that group, and then ensure that that group will be an exclusive, safe environment for spiritual vitality and spiritual well-being.
I want to say a little bit more about the exclusive but non-competitive thing, too. Something I've really appreciated about our friendship, too, is... It really does feel that way. Like, there's no disadvantage to me that Nick has strong friendships outside of our group. That doesn't hurt me at all. I think that's great, because I love Nick and I want him to thrive in his life. We're not competitive with one another for affection or for attention. At an event like Pepperdine, it's not like we feel like we have to spend all of our time together. We have to huddle together. That we try to just cultivate a spirit of ease around that. I have friends that I've known for much longer than these guys, and in certain ways I'm closer to, because we've shared different experiences. I'm close with my family, I'm close with my spouse, and there's no disadvantage to this community because there are strong relationships elsewhere. And so that's something that I think is significant for us. When it gets to picking people... Don McLaughlin is one of my favorite people and preachers. Don tells this story about going to his dad's funeral, and the comment somebody made about his dad was, "Don, your dad believed Jesus was right about everything." And that's a phrase that has really stuck with me. So I like to look at the life of Jesus, and sometimes I find what Jesus does and says really surprises me. And this was one of those passages that I stumbled across at some point. The passage right before this in Mark, Jesus is surrounded by crowds to the extent that he tells his disciples, like, "Hey, have a boat ready so that I can get out of here when I need to." Just the crowds are all around him. The passage right after this is when Jesus' family comes and they're ready to take him and have him committed because they think he's crazy. And also some religious leaders are accusing him of being demon-possessed. So he is right in the crux of ministry. And what he does, he goes up on the mountainside and he calls to himself those he wanted. And I think so often in ministry, I think there's a real gift that sometimes in churches, like, we're thrust into a relationship with people we would never choose and never pick, because I think that reminds us that it's God who brings us together. But I also think there's a role in ministry for just figuring out, hey, who are the people you want to be around, that you like and that you value? And it's also significant that they came to him. Right? So there is this, hey, I want you, and there's a response. And we don't know, Jesus chose 12, those were the ones he wanted. We don't know if he also asked, like, George, and George was like, "No thanks, Jesus, I'm not interested in this," right? That there is kind of this desire and response that becomes part of that. So I'd encourage you to sit with that question if you're interested in pursuing spiritual friendship, of just who's the person you want to do this with. Don't force it. And that may be somebody you're already close to, although that can be difficult also if you've already kind of established a rapport in your relationship. Or it may just be, in my case, like with Nick and Eric, we enjoy each other, and I had seen enough of their life to kind of know what they're about and to know that we could trust each other. So it seemed just kind of enough to know, hey, we might like to do this together and to take a next step. So Jesus is right about everything. Choose those that he wants.
Let me make a comment real quick about some overlapping communities, and Mick was talking about this for a second, and I'll kind of draw it out for you. Maybe those of you over there are going to have a hard time seeing this. But we were just having a good conversation with a dear friend of ours who's a generation above us, our dad's generation. Both of us have dads that are in ministry as well. And I think, you know, that generation was sending out so many more ministers than this generation is sending out. But I also think that in many of those ministers and ministry families, my mother would certainly speak to this, felt like they were kind of out on the frontier doing ministry on their own, alone, and sometimes even competitive with other peers and stuff. So I think that generation has set up our generation to have the kind of spiritual friendships we're talking about. And so we're actually bolstered by kind of you might think about like concentric circles of spiritual friendships. I'll draw that out. So at the bullseye, we have each other, this spiritual friendship that we're describing in this group. And then we meet weekly. We do that. We're going to talk about the technology, but we do it through what's called Google Hangout, which is kind of like Skype or FaceTime, or we just do a conference call if we're mobile at that point. We meet weekly. Outside of that, we're part of a group of like seven or eight ministers.
I think there's eight.
Eight yeah. of us. That meet monthly on Monday, also via Google Hangout, and we read books together.
Yeah, and all this is, that one is our lunch hour.
Yeah, we do that on the lunch hour. And then outside of that, we're part of a group of, we've talked about CMI a couple of times, and it's called the Contemplative Ministers Initiative. If you weren't here yesterday, that's a ministry of ACU that gathers ministers together to teach them spiritual disciplines, but also so they can support each other. And there's probably 40 guys between the two cohorts that you know we overlap with.
And I would even air club not just CMI, but I know other cohorts that exist as well. So
yep.
What this is, and I really appreciate if you don't know this, reach out to people like the Randy Harris's, the Mike Popes of the world, because they know that our generation is hungry for community, and so they're finding money and resources out there to create these groups, and there's more than one, and so guys like that I think would be a good resource to point you into that direction if you're looking for something.
So,
like that.
And as you're thinking about how might I find a group like this, so one option is you go out and you look for two or three guys or girls that you can have this kind of deep spiritual friendship with. You establish a covenant like we talked about yesterday, and we'll go over that again today. And you kind of work your way out to maybe these other concentric circles. Or you could start here. Like, what's a big group I'm a part of? Maybe I'm part of the regional ministers network or elder network, or I come to Pepperdine and there's a couple hundred people here that are like-minded, wanting to pursue a close relationship with God. Okay, so what if I set about asking, like, 10 of them, hey, let's read a book together every month. Like, let's do a book club, as cheesy as that may sound. And then out of that group, as you're getting together once a month and talking with them, you identify like two of them that you think, okay, I could do it with them. And then so you kind of work your way this way instead of
And that's
way.
The model we took.
Yeah. Is that helpful to see that at
sure.
all? Okay. I thought that may be worth clarifying a little bit. Okay. So we'll get practical for a while and talk about the things we do and that we would recommend. And so pick a time every week where you can talk. And it's helpful if that's consistent because you block it out on your schedule. You know this. It's like prayer or reading your Bible. If you don't pick a time, you're not going to do that. So, hey, how are you? So, like, pick a time to do that. I haven't seen you in a long time. My roommate's sister right there. And so glad to have you here. So that's one of the important things. And then we got this group covenant that we shared with you all yesterday. Was anybody not here yesterday that would like a copy of this?
Yeah, they're in really good shape. I folded them in my pocket.
Who else? And so the three of us have committed to this group covenant together. And you can see it on the screen behind me, but if you don't have a copy or if you got a copy yesterday, you can look at your Aaron newsletter. And this is, so what, one of the practical things we did, we wanted to share some of the practical dimensions, is that we met together for 6 months to a year before we had the covenant, and we wanted to push a little bit deeper, and so we established this covenant. And one of the things we did for a long season, maybe a year, is each time we got together, we would begin our session by reading the covenant together. Mm-hmm. And then we, to prompt the kind of deep conversation that's truly knowing each other's fully, we worked our way through the covenant. And so like in this first section, we made rules of life. We're going to talk about those next. And we, each week, so Mick presented his 1 week, Ben did the next week, I did the next week. We challenged each other on our rules, and then we used those rules, which we'll share again, to follow up on each other each week. How are you following on your rules? And then, you know, for instance, the next one, I think the next one's the hardest. We spent a couple weeks listening to one another. So we commit to listening to one another without judgment or condemnation. We commit to sharing with one another those things we would rather not share with one another whenever they arise. And so we each agreed to, we're going to pick something we don't want to share, and we're going to share it.
And that was the most terrifying one, I think, for us. But I think it was also the greatest one.
Yeah, it was.
And I don't remember who the first one was. It might have been you, Ben. I don't know. It might have been me. I don't remember. It might have been you, Eric. Who knows?
Yeah.
But I remember the first guy who went ahead and laid it out there. And it's amazing what confession does to a community. I mean, it just lifted up this burden and anxiety that I think all of us were feeling, like, oh, crud, we're about to have to get to confession time, and I have to, you know, tell them about my Barbie collection. But it wasn't like that. Like, and ironically, through all this, like, I've even become more confessional to my broader spheres. And so that, to me, was the most significant moment for us in our group, was being truly honest with one another.
Yeah.
For me at the time, I was scared of myself. I was just started taking anxiety meds. And there was a lot of insecurities that I was dealing with. And having these guys to share that burden, because I'm a preacher and, you know, I got to show people that there's nothing wrong with me. That was incredible. It was life-changing for me.
And I think a lot of times, sir, I want you to go, Ben.
Okay.
I think we have to say better.
Well, I just had a couple things to respond to that, too. Related to, that's one of the principles we talked about last week, too. Like, vulnerability is what creates community, even though it's so scary. That's what actually creates the space for some real things to happen. These overlapping friendship groups were also really significant in that, too, because we shared some real stuff, and then, you know, we had a conference call that month, and I know, okay, Mick and Eric could really embarrass me right now in front of this group of people, because they know some stuff about me that I don't want other people to know, and they held that, and so you're able to see that trust demonstrated. That then makes the next experience of vulnerability a little bit easier. And so so that became kind of significant, those overlapping communities. And even as we've negotiated life changes and things that are happening too, like where there is, we'll need to share some news with this group to know these guys aren't going to break that for me. They're going to let me do that on my own, and they're going to, just do that, honestly.
Besides Barbie and confessions, the Barbie collection, what do you find yourselves talking about? I mean,
You want to answer that? Or any of us could, I think. But
are you talking about specifically as it relates to confession, or just every time we talk?
Just when you talk, what do you find yourselves talking about? What seems to be your conversation?
So for like the first six months, we literally went through this covenant. And we first, so our time together usually lasts, we keep it pretty tight, but we're usually together for about an hour. And so the first 10 minutes, 5 to 10 minutes, was just, hey, how you doing? How's your family? Because we know what life's about, right? Just kind of the shallow stuff. Hey, how's the weather in your town? And then we would read the covenant, and we would each
I would read a line, Ben would read a line, Eric would read a line. Then we knew from the week before that on that specific day, we knew that we were going to talk about, we commit to loving each other with Christ-conditioned love as it's described in 1 Corinthians 13 in the Gospels. And so that day, that was our conversation.
Okay.
So for a long while, we focused on our covenant. In a moment, we're going to introduce you to our rule of life. That's another thing. So we spent, I don't know, probably 3 to 6 months easily on describing our rule of life. And then our rule of life became a really good framework for us to hold one another accountable and talk about it. And so, like, one of the most important questions we ask every time is not just how are you doing, but how are you really doing? And you know what I mean? And so we actually talk about, are you practicing your daily practices and your rule of life? And have you gone on a date with Lindsay? Which Lindsay's his wife, by the way. So we actually have, even though it's organic, I would say it's also very organized and tight. And we found that to be necessary for us.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'll remind you, we covered this yesterday. Some of you weren't here, but you know, the CMI is largely about spiritual disciplines and spiritually disciplined ministers. And so as you're working down this way, one of the things that was important was, and Ben really spoke to this yesterday, I know these disciplines are important, but I know when I get home I'm not going to do them. And so I want some people that are holding me accountable. And so it's hard to hold somebody accountable without some kind of standard or rule you're holding them accountable to. And so that's the rule of life that we each have. And so one of the things we do is make sure each time we talk, how are you doing in relation to your rule? Are you doing the things you said you would be doing?
Related to that. Oh, sorry.
Is this different for each of you?
Yes.
The rule of life is different. Okay, each of you has a rule of life.
Right.
How you try to... Okay.
Yeah, and I think part of that's significant, too, that we don't hold each other accountable to what we want the other person to do. Mm-hmm. We hold each other accountable to what they have articulated that they would like to do.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And we know what that is because we've shared that with one another. So we can ask, are you staying at this? Are you working at this? And that's not a coercive move to say, you ought to do this, right? But we already know what we're committed to. And so I think that's a helpful thing.
Yeah. And I've just thrown them up here behind you. That, I mean, that's mixed right.
So, there. Yeah, Ben, like, Ben is definitely more contemplative than I am. And I don't know what that means, except for he is. And he probably knows about
it.
Yeah. So, like, for me... this is really important, I think. Our rule of life is super simple. And what I mean by Ben is, like, you might read his, and he might have, like, you know, like, he'll set aside at least 20 minutes for prayer. Mm-hmm. It's taken him some time, but he's worked that into his life.
Yeah.
Where for me, like, I'm still at a place, and it's not that he's better or worse, we're just at different places, where for me, what's worked for me is different. And so what's worked for me in my life is, I wake up every morning, and I just say the Jesus prayer, until it just becomes natural. I just stop saying it. And so I say, Lord Jesus Christ, Son of God, have mercy on me, a sinner. Lord Jesus Christ, Son of God, have mercy on me, a sinner. So I just say that in my breath as I wake up. And then I just say that when I go to bed. And I didn't, honestly, this is a side class, a side note, but I didn't know what the contemplative life was doing for me for a long time. Because I was always taught, hey, you know, I got to get more spiritual. I just came to Pepperdine. Okay, when I get back, I'm going to read my Bible more. And what I learned, and these guys will test this, because you may not know this, but Enneagram, anyone's familiar with that, I'm a 3, which means, like, for me, I'm, like, obsessed with, like, I need results. And so for me, I thought the contemplative life was result-driven. Like, if I pray more, then I'm going to be closer to God, right? But what happens when I pray more and I'm not closer to God? I failed. Mm-hmm. And so what they did, this is so important, one of the most important things for me in this group, was they kept reminding me, man, it's not about results. It's just about finding life with God.
Yeah.
And so that's why these weekly calls for me were so important. It provided me with a type of rhythm that I had never experienced before in life with God.
And it's probably worth pointing out that we are a part of each other's rules of life.
Yeah.
So part of the weekly practices, monthly practices, if you think about the concentric circles, the conference call with ministers group, that's the circle out. Here's the phone call with Mick and Eric weekly, and then yearly we commit to getting together face-to-face meetup with Mick and Eric. This has been this rules.
Can we see all three of them again?
Yeah, sure.
For ideas.
Yeah, this is mine.
You guys do texting and email?
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's one of the that's actually one of our points out here. I'll back up and show you that. That third bullet down, this is on our covenant. We commit to interrupting each other's lives when we need each other. And so, like, I've got a standing rule, I think these guys do too, that I'll pretty much answer their call no matter what.
Yep.
Like, I'll step out. There's few people I would, like, you know, family time I would break that for. These are those guys. And we text all the time. I mean, we're texting constantly.
Yeah.
And I tend to those texts with an urgency that I don't tend to other texts with.
Even though some of them are nonsense.
And so, yeah. Some of them were just, like, sending memes to each other and stuff.
Yeah.
But do y'all want to say anything else about that?
I'll just say, if you're interested in examples, shoot me an email. I'd be happy to share mine with you if you'd like to.
For the rules of life.
So, yeah, for the rule of
yeah,
life.
Yeah,
you can't get it on the slide.
Here's one. So. And we found, because we were putting together these rules of life, a ton of good resources on what a rule of life might look like.
Yeah.
And if you email us, we can share those with you.
I'd like to say, too, just about, Mick brought up, one of the recurring themes in our group is just the way spiritual growth and development is very nonlinear, and it's very non, so much in life we think in terms of progress and like a gaining ground. It is just,
it's not that way at
it's
all.
It's not like that. The spiritual life, we're constantly having to kind of recommit ourselves to every piece of it.
Talk about this.
Yeah, this was the title of a book that Randy Harris had us read for our Contemplative Ministers Initiative. We don't remember too much about the book, but we love the title.
Always We Begin Again.
And we found ourselves, even in our conversations, we'll say, yeah, I'm kind of in an Always We Begin Again phase, where maybe I've been really grounded in my disciplines for a while and was feeling very centered in God, and then something happened.
I had a kid,
whatever it is. You get knocked off that, and then you kind of start all over again. And it doesn't feel like progress. It feels like something different than that. And I think that's significant to keep in mind, too. Because, if you're looking for results, committing yourself to a community like this, you may not see them. You probably won't see them instantly, for sure. So that's just something to keep in mind, too.
How often do you guys actually get together?
Once a week. We talk once a week on the phone. Face-to-face at least once a year.
Yeah.
We'll run into each other. Like, I may just only run into Ben at a conference or just Eric. But we almost always run into each other at least once a year. And if not, we intentionally will meet each other once a year. That's our covenant to one another.
Yeah,
last year. You ever get your families to
go? Not really.
We haven't done that with all three of us yet. We took a vacation, me and my wife, where we stayed with Mick and Tara for a while. And when we lived in Jackson, we were about 3 hours away from Eric and Lindsay, so we'd go pop in and visit them.
But, like, my wife actually, just met Eric this week.
Yeah,
she gave him a big hug, and she was like, because she knows what we're doing. And so even though that hasn't crossed, it has crossed. So it was fun to watch that, right? Yeah. It was like there was like this instant connection because they know the type of life that we're sharing together.
And I know her super well, even though I've never met her.
Right.
And not any, you know, like of the secrets y'all share.
No.
But what she does for you and what,
right.
you know, who she's made you share that all the time.
Yeah.
So, you know,
my wife,
I love her.
My wife, Laura, often says, have you talked to Mick and Eric about this? Conversation.
Yeah, and this has helped my marriage because I shared this with my wife. And one of her first responses is, well, why don't we do something like this? And I was like, you know, I've been married 15 years this year. And I'm like, duh. Right? So even out of this, we have become again, it's not linear. There's no results, but we've become at least more intentional and more vulnerable with one another in our spiritual life together as spouses.
We all are doing some new spiritual disciplines together.
Together now, yeah.
What do you guys do in your? Oh, I'm sorry. What do you guys do in your yearly get together?
It's been different every time.
Yeah, and a lot, like, this is it this year. A lot of times it's kind of patched into an event we might be going to together. One was at one of the contemplative ministers' retreats was in Dallas, and we just tagged on an extra day. We went to a campground. There was a burn ban. We were hoping to sit around a campfire, but we just had, like, a lantern.
It was cold.
It was
a terrible experience. I was so glad it was over.
We're glad to get home. But yeah, it's, like, different. It's, like, different.
But do you have a thing that you guys follow? Do you guys schedule it out, or is it just kind of...
That's a great question.
Yeah.
Because we're very, not very, but we are fairly organized and thoughtful throughout the year during the week. But I think when we get together, I think it's actually been no agenda.
It's pretty organized.
We've never talked about it, but as I think about it, it's actually nice to have no agenda when we get together.
Well, we were super structured to begin, and some structure still guides us. But we've probably moved into a more organic season where we naturally talk about our souls. Our disciplines, like when we're together, that we don't just talk about sports. Like pretty instantly, it can go deep.
Yeah, that's a great point that we were thinking about for you guys. Is we would highly recommend to be super organized early on up front. Let that set the tone, and then because eventually, just the natural stuff will eventually just kind of form and take place. But that's why for us, the question asked earlier was, well, what do you do? Early on, we knew what to expect the next week, and so that was very intentional on our part. Now it's a little looser, I would say.
Yeah, and I mean with this principle too, it wouldn't surprise me if we find ourselves going off the rails at some point and need to come back to a more organized structure too. We just kind of have to honor what's happening organically, I think. Chris, yeah, Vic.
I was going to ask because I know like ministers and their wives or husbands. There's sometimes a tension of, do I need to burden my spouse with this? Mm-hmm. I don't want to ever hold any secrets from her, and
sure.
I'm probably more open than some of my other people I know. But at the same time, has this allowed an avenue for y'all to kind of filter some of that stuff out from it being a burden on her?
Absolutely.
To be
yes.
A burden on
that's great. Yes.
Yeah, in fact... sometimes we might even ask, do you think this is something I should share with Kara or Lindsay or Laura? Like, they become, because you want your spouse to be invested and involved in your life of ministry. If you've been in ministry, you know that. But there's always that line you're talking about. And so that this group is a good group to help kind of feed off that. And they'll say, yeah, you probably want to share that with Kara. That's kind of an important deal. It affects her. Or, yeah, you know... It's okay to hold on to that for a little longer, something like that. So it's not hiding. And our spouses know this. You know, they've been in ministry long enough. They've heard these classes. And now my wife's at a place in her own ministry, in her own life, and she's now participating in something similar to CMI, where she holds her own secrets. And I'm okay with that. That's not like we're, you know, it's healthy.
And also to Chris's point there. Ministry can be frustrating, and it's hard to believe. I was like, man, they apparently theirs aren't frustrating. And so, one of the things that certainly we do a lot is process frustrations and what to do about them.
Yeah.
And you know, like I can speak personally that numerous times my course of action has been determined by my conversations with them. And that those have always proved better than when I responded without talking to them.
There was a good example of that was there's still a struggle with this, but there's a season in my life where, and people know me, know like every time I talk about something, I'm like, man, do I really want to stay in ministry? I just kept saying that over and over again. And Ben finally just like I think one point just said, dude, either stay in ministry or not. Quit talking about it. And that was so helpful, like, for me to hear that. Because it was like, and I still struggle with it. I still say it. But still. But just the idea, like, I had that relationship with him where he could say that to me didn't hurt my feelings at all. Mm-hmm. In fact, it was very helpful.
And I think those conversations in the drama of church conversations can be wearying to our spouses, especially at times. And now, again, I want to share what she needs to know and stuff. But it's also like some of like the mundane stuff. I think it's better to process with them than her sometimes. She doesn't have to be as frustrated with all the people I'm frustrated with.
Yeah.
I'm curious to know why you recommend for this to be outside your ministry context, and maybe if you have some special circumstances. I just want to hear what your thought is behind kind of maybe encouraging people to not have this kind of a group within maybe where you're ministering.
Yeah, I don't know that I would state that personally. I don't know that I'd state that as baldly. Like, we can just kind of share from our own experiences. This is what we found helpful.
Yeah,
To me, I mean, the dream. Yeah, and the dream I have of church is that it becomes a safe space for these kinds of relationships to happen. But I think we just also acknowledge the reality of many churches is that doesn't exist. And for ministers, too, that can be really difficult to cultivate. I think it would be awesome if you could find it on the ground with the people that you're close to. I think that would be great. And we're, as I said at the beginning, I like the line, in the spiritual life, all of us are beggars sharing bread. So I kind of feel like, you know, here's a little bit of bread that we found, but if you find it somewhere else, then that's awesome. I'd love to hear about that experience.
Yeah, Ben brought up this week, so your dad might have shared this with you, but eventually this would be something we would love to share with our churches, you know, and help them create or cultivate these types of friendships and communities. So that's a fair question. I think the only reason why it sounded like I was gospelizing outside of ministry, though I didn't mean it that way, is because sometimes people who live in your ministry, they don't respect your bias as much because they know it's bias, right? So, like, what I mean by that is, let's say I'm sharing with the church member a staff issue I have. Well, he knows the staff member. He's got his bias, or she's got her bias, whatever it may be, and I've got mine, and she's going to listen to me, but she's not really, because she's got her own biases. Where when I can, sometimes it's just nice to talk to somebody that knows nothing about what I'm talking about. And so there's some, for me, there's something rich about that.
Yeah, in an instance like that, the only person I care about in that situation directly is about Mick and his relationship with God.
Yeah.
And I don't know what's happening with the other person. And so that is helpful. I think that's a really helpful relationship to have in place.
Which is a dynamic you never have at your church. Mm-hmm. Because you're always concerned about Mick and everybody around
Mick. Yeah, that's really good. Yeah. We're still working this out, so maybe that's why.
Because it's good to hear your thoughts behind like some of the cautions or some of the advantages of having that outside.
Yeah.
That context.
I think all of us would say we desire the church would be that place where everybody can be totally vulnerable, including the ministers of that church. But if you're waiting on the church to become that place, you may be waiting a long time. And like, you need this now. You need this yesterday. We did. And so we couldn't afford to wait on that, Chris.
And I would say, too, and this may just be my own experience, but realizing when money gets involved, when a paycheck gets involved.
Sure, there's other.
Yeah. There are things attached to that.
So many overlapping things.
That, one, is baggage that you don't like, but two, you're going to have to deal with things in a different way.
Yeah.
And there's a job to it.
There's other hands,
Yeah, I was just going to comment on kind of the whole, you know, sharing or not sharing with spouses and having this outside of your own ministry context. I think for me a big positive of that is that, you know, I don't want to kind of quote poison my wife
right
towards this member or someone that she may really love and she might not have any, you know, she doesn't necessarily need to know whatever might be going on there. And I don't want to, you know, I'm sure you guys may at times struggle with like not gossiping, like you don't want to come off gossipy or anything like that, but sometimes you just got to get stuff out there, like this is really frustrating me and hurting me, you know, in this ministry. And once again, you know, if that's, you know, if you have another pastor or minister or whatever from your church in this group, it may be hard to share those things with them. You don't want to, once again, poison them against someone else or create these kind of gossipy type situation.
Yeah, speaking, venting in a safe environment, in my opinion, is not slandering, especially in this circumstance, because Ben's really good, so is Eric, and he said that earlier. When he hears me, he's not hearing how bad this human being is or whatever. What he's hearing is, Mick, where is your life with God? And sometimes, almost all the time, it has nothing to do with that person. It has to do with me, right? So, like, it's almost always, like, I know I'm setting myself up to get criticized when I start complaining about my church. And not in a bad way, but that's, but I know that. I need to hear that. I need to hear, Mick, you need to be patient, or Mick, you need to be more understanding, or whatever it may be. And so, for me to vent and bare my soul, and for them to care about my soul, it's been really good.
You know, a lot of folks minister or serve in like a multi-staff church, and then some are out there on their own. And I think, you know, it's tempting to say, like, if I am surrounded by other staff members, that I don't need something like this. But I think you're absolutely right. And all of us have other staff members we work with that we needed something different from what we got with them. This co-ministry we were doing with them, we needed something different that had to do with us and God, that was hard to come by with those that we serve with and love. It's just something different.
Because we got 15 minutes, I feel like we should talk about...
We know not what?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So why are we doing this, basically? And we want to keep answering questions that you may have. But one of the guys that formed us, Randy Harris, and I don't know if he's the one who said this first. He probably stole it from some spiritual master.
Yeah.
But, you know, he said the contemplative life is preparation for we know not what. And that you don't know what's going to come your way. And so you want to go deep so that when something does come your way, you're not standing in the shallows. You know, you've got this deep anchor, or anchored in the shallows. And so in the same way that we're committed to the lives of contemplative prayer and growing in that, we are not masters like Randy is for neophytes. But in the same way that we're committed to that, we view this relationship as preparation for we know not what. And I think we want to give some examples of what we do not what that came our way and how this sustained us. When y'all want to jump in there?
Yeah, I'm definitely afraid to. So a lot's happened in the last 3 years for all of us. And we've gone through some pretty difficult things. And I'm really grateful for this group.
Yes.
Yeah, a lot of it's personal demons for me that I've been walking through for a while. But this group sustained me and fueled me. Now, I'm not going to give them all the glory because there's other spheres, but they're the regular rhythm, right? They're the ones that they're not the shock to the heart. You know, I'll give that to the great preacher at Pepperdine, but they're the ones that kind of help maintain the rhythm. They're the pacemaker, I guess. I think I've shared with you already some of my not whats. My not whats were happening for me before I even got to this group. So I think for me, I was driven by the not whats. And I shared a little bit about that yesterday with cancer, with my health, and my anxieties I had to deal with post-cancer. And so I was already living in the not whats. And so for me, this group helped me right away. And there was probably the days, those weeks where we talked. I think all of us have been at this one point where we apologized and said, I'm so sorry I've taken over the whole time. Like, because we'd call and then Mick would just, and if you know me, I talk a lot anyways, but I just spoke the whole hour. And even though I was apologetic, I really wasn't, because it was so necessary for me to speak the whole hour, and it was so necessary for them to listen.
Well, and we've all done it.
And we've all done it. And and so now my not what for me is just trying to sustain and stay afloat. And I'm not picking my church apart. I just think ministry in general is difficult. And so, like, you know, my own calling, my own vocation, who am I as a minister? And so that's been my recent not what that that they've been help walking me through. So.
One of the big things we've, not big things, but one of the things that's come up multiple times over our 3 years is vocation and stuff. And so we've processed through one significant job transition, you know, been moved in 6 months ago. And so we processed that through together, but we've also processed through staying put, why we should stay put, whether we should stay in ministry. We process those things together. And that's been really life-giving for us. Ben, do you want to talk about your experience related to that at all?
Yeah, I've taken these guys on a ride the last couple of years. So 2016 was a hard year for the church I was at in Jackson, Mississippi, as I imagine it was for most churches. That was the election year. We just made some significant changes in the way women are involved in the life of the church that had had some significant fallout too. And so, and at the end of that year, there's a big leadership transition at the church, so that basically all of the elders who had hired me and brought me in were gone, and there was a new group that had come in the course of a short amount of time. And I thought that was the biggest challenge that I was facing in my life. My wife was pregnant about 22 weeks along, and I went to the office one day early in January and got a call from her. And just said, she just got in for a routine checkup. Can you get over here immediately? They can't find a heartbeat for our baby. And so I don't remember that drive, but somehow I made it over to the doctor's office where she was. Her doctor wasn't there, so it was a person we had never met, had to break to us the news that our baby had died in utero. And we learned when you're that far along, you still have to deliver. And so we call family. Now my dad's in the room here too, and if I look at him, I'm gonna cry. But we called family and immediately showed up. In-laws showed up, but some of the first people I talked to were Mick and Eric too, and they became kind of constants through that process for me. And in processing everything that happened with that, and I think for me spiritually, like it created a real question of whether or not I'm going to continue trusting God or not, because if this is the way God has set up the universe to work, am I fully on board with that? But for me, Mick and Eric were just a consistent, faithful presence in my life that I always knew whatever I was thinking, whatever was going on, I could call those guys and they would receive me well, and they would have compassion. They wouldn't tire of me talking about the same things over and over again. And it just kind of held space for me to work through that whole process. And like Mick said, they weren't the only ones who were doing that. My dad was actually a huge ministry presence for me through that time too, and family members, and church surrounded us in certain ways too that was really vital for us. But through that experience, both my wife and I were on staff at the church, and it has become a real life-changing experience for us. Part of what she's discerned is doing vocational ministry in church is not something she's interested in anymore, and so she wants to explore some different avenues, really learning how to minister to families who have also dealt with child loss and some things like that. Her class would be worth attending once she's able to teach it. And so that also brought us into this season of not only grief, but also discerning, is it time for us to make a move? Because vocationally we were in different places. The real crazy part for us, though, came when our first baby, Daisy, is her name, was due in May. And we went on a trip to kind of mourn that. And then we had a family trip in June in which we were driving in to visit my parents. And Laura said, we need to stop at a drugstore and pick up a pregnancy test. I was like, now? but we did. And we picked one of those that has, like, the ambiguous, like, lines on it. Yeah, and yeah. We took one that night, and it came back positive. And but I don't think we slept at all that night. We went back to the drugstore the next day, got another one that actually gives you a clear plus sign. We found out that we were pregnant again. And honestly, I mean, the grief of losing our first child was awful, and is awful. We still carry that. But then we had to go through another pregnancy immediately after that, which was just a lot to carry. And so for me, I mean, these guys, knowing I wasn't carrying that on my own, I think it saved my life and saved my soul and saved my marriage, saved my ministry. I don't know what I would have done or who I would have been without having this kind of relationship in place and negotiating the stuff that we've been negotiating the past years.
Yeah.
And our baby was born back in January. His name's Samuel, and he is wonderful. He is not a replacement for our first child. We still are parents who are grieving one loss and celebrating another one. And now as I'm embarking on this new kind of journey of parenthood, I find again, I have a lot of conversations with Meg and Eric about that and how to engage that in healthy ways too. And so we had a church member back in Jackson who, as we were going through the grief process, we also grieved pretty publicly with our church and kind of led them through that. Because when you're in ministry, when it's your child, that child also kind of belongs to the church, and that's a hard thing to negotiate. But she said, you built your raft well before the flood came. And or built your boat well before the flood came. And anyway, this was the biggest piece of that boat and kind of riding through the flood for me. So.
Yeah, I want to add to that. I think, you know, one of the questions you ask, why do you pursue the contemplative life? And I think it's for these moments. I mean, there's probably other reasons, but it's really for we know not what. It's for those things you just can't plan in life. And that's why you center yourself with prayer and meditation and why you find friendships like this. It's really for those things that will happen in your life that you cannot plan.
And I think that one of the things that's worth pointing out about Ben's story is that, you know, the decision to relocate happened in the midst of that long story. And so what he really owned was that, like, I'm in a place, you know, the spiritual word is desolation, and I can't trust myself to make significant decisions. And my wife's also in that same place, so, like, we're... but I can trust Mick and Eric to try to listen to God on my behalf when it's hard for me to hear God. And so many of you probably have a spiritual director, which is somebody who's listening to God for your sake and listening to you for God's sake. And so that's also something that spiritual companions can do in maybe a different way. And so now maybe Mississippi will blame Mick and I for y'all. I mean, I'm not sure about that, but... you know, that wasn't something that just, like, Ben felt good about leaving. It was something the three of us felt good about, this position. And in the same way, like, I've faced significant decisions that I made because of these guys and their advice. In addition to my wife, things I'm processing with her. But I wouldn't have dared to approach those decisions without them. Because even, you know, as I'm contemplating these things and trying to listen to God, I don't, it's hard to, I don't trust myself in that. Mm-hmm. And so I want to make sure what I'm hearing from God, they're hearing too.
Do you guys ever disagree about some of those decisions?
Yes.
Yeah.
But then I step in and I give them the right answer. Yeah.
It's always good to have.
It's nice to have my first time.
You know, like, one of the things about our group and this is reflected in the covenant, is that we don't hold back and we do say how we feel. And, you know, if I think you need to revise your approach or you're being a jerk, whatever that is, or no, that's a bad decision, we say it, and that's been said many times. And so that speaks to that, But, like, I know these guys love me. So it doesn't phase our...
Maybe in that question I'm addressing, have we had a fight or a disagreement, or have we left a phone call? And you're going to ask this, but I'm thinking back. Have any of us left feeling hurt by the... I don't think that's happened yet.
I guess maybe what I was asking is, like, if one of you has a question and the other two disagree about that, is there kind of a...
Oh, yeah, that's happened. In fact, like, even with... and I can't think of any specific examples, but with... Like, I'm sure there was times when you were considering what to do after the loss of Daisy. You know, do I stay? Do I go? You know, I have this opportunity before me. And there's probably times in that conversation that we're having with one another that everyone was not on the same page. I'm sure.
Yeah, I also think, though, we don't make decisions for each other.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, we honestly state... We try to ask good questions, and we try to help each other listen to ourselves and listen to the Spirit, I think, more than... but if we said, like, that sounds pretty dangerous, like, like that line of thinking, that doesn't sound very good to me. We'd let each other know that.
Now,
I
would say the next group, the 7 and 8... Like, we disagree more, but that's the purpose of that group. We read a book, and we share theology. That's probably that group, and that's still a good group, too. In fact, I think I like some of the other guys better than these guys in that group.
They're good guys.
Just kidding. But we'll read a book, and then we'll just challenge each other and think theologically. We just recently read Nadia Bolz Weber's book, Shameless. And on, I think the subtitle is Sexual Revolution or something, I don't remember what it is, but it's on sexuality, and it's a pretty radical book. And so, of course, even in our group, we had lots of different opinions, and so there were some differences and stuff, and I think we respected and honor all of that.
Just in our last minute, and so thankful for y'all, Adele Calhoun has a book called The Spiritual Disciplines Handbook, which if you don't have that, you should. It's really, really good. She talks about spiritual friendships, and she offers the exercises on this slide and the next slide. I'll flash them up there as a way to kind of get started in terms of looking for spiritual friends and how you might begin that. And they're good. We didn't follow these steps, but we like them. If you're really looking for a resource to help, that's Adele Calhoun, Spiritual Disciplines Handbook.
Well, how did you guys first meet?
I don't remember.
How did you get together?
Yeah, we talked about that last week. We overlapped at ACU. And then, kind of we're in each other's circles.
All three went to ACU?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, that's right.
Met there, huh?
Yes, sir.
Well, we want to respect y'all's time. Thanks so much for being with us. We're glad to stick around and answer questions, but thanks for coming.
Yeah, please stay.